And welcome to the program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KABC. Happy Sunday, listeners far and wide. Okay, so let me tell you one tidbit. We're going through the RNC. I was there, spent all week there. I'm slowly recovering, although my poor voice is still crackling under the strain of excessive communicating. So I do apologize if occasionally I go dark on you, having to cough and clear my bronchial passages. Where am I? What do I? Well, okay. Yesterday I gave you a great rundown of what happened, an overview of the convention, discussed Cruz and my thoughts on the speech. So please, it was a great show. It really was. We went through the whole convention. And download the podcast if you missed it, because I did get into quite a bit of good stuff. The website, as you know, samnation.com, has all those treasures and gems. Do you know, interestingly enough, how this all works, the voting? Because for months, you know, ever since February, we've been hearing about delegates. Delegates. Who gets what delegates? And are they bound or unbound? Which, of course, you know, it sounds like a bad BDSM novel, you know. I'd like to order two bound delegates. Yeah, 50 Shades of Trump. Exactly. So, no, they don't actually tie up these delegates. Just has to do with whether they are, according to the rules, allowed to vote their conscience, or if they're bound to vote in a way that reflects, right, the will of the people, which, of course, I think is the absurd arguments, is always the loser is the one arguing that there's some moral reasons why delegates should be unbound and vote their conscience. These delegates, who are these people? They are, for the most part, weirdos. That's it. They're just plain weirdos. And the best part about it is that they're being chased by the media. They're like the bells of the ball. And for the most part, and some of these people are very cool. You know, they're state representatives. They're people who work in the party, or they're people who are business leaders. But you know, some of these guys are just goofballs. And so the whole idea of this goofball guy, you know, I'm thinking of one Cruz supporter that was lurking in the hallways, a redheaded ginger snap pea that was making his way through the hallways and talking to anybody and everybody that would care to listen about why Cruz was chosen by God and divinely appointed to be the next president of the United States. Okay, this guy was literally high on catnip. The idea of him voting his conscience, no, you got... There's a vote. A populist state voted. The vote broke down a certain way, and the delegates need to come to the convention and vote based on what the vote was, what the people decided. That's democracy. Not a series of randomly picked people, you know, selected by the party, who then go and show up and are gonna decide to vote for somebody completely different. And so for the most part, these delegates were bound. And of course, the vote went exactly as expected. It all went for Trump. But it is interesting to note that there were loose in the wild on the floor of the convention a beast more rare than, I don't know, insert whatever, than the bald eagle. What am I talking about? I'm talking about a Jeb Bush delegate. This endangered species, loose on the convention floor. I don't know how many were there. 10? I don't remember. But this is what's crazy. The math breaks down as follows. $50 million spent by Bush per delegate vote. Wrap your head around that one. $50 million. That's a lot of guacamole bowls. guacabolis. You remember those? Jeb Bush selling for $100 branded Jeb 2016 guacamole bowls. That was his idea of Hispanic outreach. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if this guy, this wet noodle of a guy, was the Republican candidate for president? Hillary would be already measuring the drapes in the Oval Office. There's no way he would have any traction. What a joke. But anyway, the real, one of the real untold stories of the convention is kind of what the disgruntledness of the political Illuminati. Every party, and the Republicans and Democrats are exactly alike in this. There is a consultant class, and I've told you about them before. These are people whose whole lives are devoted to their professions, their careers are devoted to political races. Now, and it could be local races, you know, and very local races. But also, every 4 years, there is the Super Bowl. It's the Holy Grail. It's that time of the political cycle when money literally rains down on them. And it trickles down to every little schmuck that is living under a rock, who has a laptop and a cell phone, and is awarded some contract, you know, $3,000 here, $5,000 here, get out the vote, get these flyers printed for this district supporting Trump or whatever candidate, you know, is running. And these people, I'm telling you, their bread and butter is money raining down from political action groups, right, from PACs, from the campaign, and their existence, this is the time when they fill their coffers. And here's the problem. It's not happening. We ran into, Valerie from Baton Rouge, or New Orleans. She's from New Orleans. And Valerie was at the Gays for Trump rally that Robbie and I attended, not as a couple, but we did attend. And Valerie, you know, we'd start talking to her and say, oh, so, you know, what's the story? How are you, you know, what do you think of Trump? Are you a fan of Trump? No. She almost made a Chris Matthews face. And teasing it out of her, we realize it's very apparent. She's been cut out. She doesn't have a role. And you know, another consultant who I won't name, a little bit higher level person, well-known in California, told me that, do you know how much Trump pays for his state leader, the guy or gal who leads the state effort for Trump? He's paying about $4,000 a month for that person. And if you're wondering, if you want some context for that, it's ridiculously low by the political class standards. Okay? These guys are used to making six figures. Easy. If the state leadership guy is making $4,000 a month, think about what the local party offices are doing, what the county officers are doing, and the guy's lamenting. He goes, Trump is so cheap. It's terrible. He's not paying anybody any money. I found out, I mean, at least according to this source, Paul Manafort is working for free. I mean, he's in it for the access and, you know, and that kind of thing. And he's got other people that are paying money into his organization, that he's other people he's representing. But he's working for free. I mean, the thing about the Trump campaign that can't be overstated is it's run on a shoestring budget. And I like it. I like it. I mean, who do you want to send to Washington? You want to send to Washington somebody who likes to spend big money, that likes to dole out lots of cash for the people in their organization. You know, I don't want, this is part of the thing that rank and file Americans are fed up with. They don't want politicians putting all their friends into government, overpaying them, giving them cush jobs. And so I like what Trump is the first person to kind of go against the grain here, the understanding, the unwritten rule that you need $2 billion to run for president. And in every election cycle, you hear the left lament this. You hear, oh, it's so terrible. It's so terrible. You need all this money to run for president that by the time you're done, you're just beholden to all the special interests and the banks own you. And oh, it's so terrible. Does that sound like somebody we know? Hillary. Yeah, it does. Of course it does. And so along comes a candidate who's not beholden to these groups, who's done it all on a shoestring budget, who's underpaying and over-delivering. I mean, certainly, right? I mean, how much did Trump pay per delegate? Probably like a nickel. It was probably less than a dollar. And that's the crazy thing. So here's Jeb Guacamole Bush paying $50 million for every one of his delegates, was what the math broke down to. Unprecedented spending in a primary. Zero traction. And it's because America woke up. It's because rank and file Americans have called BS on the system as it was. And the media they don't get, they're so lost. We got to talk about the Trump speech when we come back. And what his kids said too, which I think almost the highlight, the best part of the entire convention. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Yeah, Ivanka's speech, I think was definitely powerful. And I love the immediate aftermath where just every reporter was flummoxed by it, because, you know, they were quick to call her, you know, she's talking about women and equal pay for equal work. And they're quick to call, well, she's adopting liberal talking points. She's basically she gave a liberal speech. You know, can I just point out something? When Ivanka Trump gets up, and as a strong woman, who many women, I believe, identify with, okay, and like, as an example, my mother, who is a strong woman, loves Ivanka Trump. Just always, every week I'm talking to her, and she'll give me some snippet about something that she said, or, you know, a savvy thing that she did. And so people are watching her, and they are listening to her. This is important. They're watching and listening. And so when Ivanka gets up and starts to talk about her dad's hiring practices, this is not some policy talking point. She's talking about the culture in the Trump organization, which is you promote women based on their ability. You promote, and she talks about this, it's not equal pay for equal work. I mean, she used the phrase, but what she's talking about is merit-based promotion. This is such a, hey, earth to liberals. This is what conservatism is all about. We don't care what you look like. We don't care where you came from. We don't care who your parents are. We care about what you bring to the table. And in a company that is based on gasp profit, right? Profit. In a company that wants to beat its competition, the truth is that a guy that owns that company wants the best person for the job. And he's not going to, he doesn't, there's, well, that's just it, isn't it? These are the left has brought us affirmative action, promoting you know, creating groups and subgroups of victims, a hierarchy of victimhood, and to what effect? Any business that is run in a way that promotes people not on their achievements, but rather on their gender, on their skin color, on some disability, what do you got? It's a total failure. Think about it in the military. I mean, and it's in that book I talked about in a while. Hopefully we'll get him on the program, maybe even next week. Gary Byrne, the Secret Service agent who wrote the book about Hillary Clinton, Crisis of Character. But one of the things that he talks about is all the affirmative action hires that began coming on into the Secret Service, and it compromised standards. It's plain and simple. It's not about promoting women. It's not about promoting minorities. It's about promoting the highest score on the exam. And if it's a woman, awesome. If it's a man, awesome. And she talks about this. So Ivanka did a very good job, in my opinion, talking about the Trump Organization and how there are more female executives there than even males. And it's not because of favoritism for women, but it's because they promote based on merit. And it just so happens there's a large number of female executives that were qualified to be in the positions that they hold. That's not advocating liberal positions, you know, no matter how many times CNN repeats it. Where she was extremely politically savvy, I think, is in her appeal to independent-minded people and people who don't necessarily affiliate themselves primarily under one particular flag. Okay, people who not necessarily are identifying strongly as Republicans or Democrats. She calls herself a millennial, which we're glad to recognize here that there are at least some millennials out there worthy of praise. But yeah, so she speaks to other millennials and she says, "I'm like you. I don't necessarily identify as a Republican or as a Democrat. I vote for the person that I think is the best for the job." And the reality is it's not just true of millennials. It's true of a lot of Americans. A lot of Americans don't necessarily vote a straight party ticket. And across America, we're running, well, it's more and more common now to have open primaries, where you may end up having two Democrats. Right, two Democrats running in the or whatnot. And then if you're a straight party voter, that's a real conundrum. And so in this context, she's making an appeal. I think making an appeal truthfully to the Bernie crowd, because there will be a lot more unhappy Bernie voters coming out of the DNC next week than there are unhappy Cruz voters. I talked about it yesterday. Cruz ruined it for him. He ruined it for himself. And he did. And again, this is the takeaway. He unified the Republican Party by making himself the villain. It's not what he intended to do, but we talked about it yesterday. Download the podcast, because I think really what he did is he got set up and he fell into a trap very stupidly. But Ivanka's speech was powerful. She was likable. She was optimistic. She was positive. Okay? And she is a strong woman whom other strong women identify with. And so to this extent, she's a very, I don't want to say just useful. I think she's a powerful surrogate for her father and for the entire campaign. I think we should expect to see more of her. She's going to take, I can see from the communications that are being sent by the Trump campaign that she's now actually sending her own, or not written by her, but there is direct communication now started for the first time during the convention being sent out directly on behalf of Ivanka Trump. And we're going to see more and more and more of her. And the press can howl and scream and shout and try to, you know, try to put it down as much as they want, but it's not going to work. The narrative that Trump is a woman-hating bigot is about as, it's just empty. It's about as empty as one of those guacamole bowls. You know, we've talked about Mar-a-Lago before. And this is if just to kind of get back to it a little bit, Mar-a-Lago was this beautiful home that was built in Florida by Marjorie Meriwether Post. It was an interesting character. She was the heiress to the Post cereal fortune, and she had more money than God. Okay, and she, you know, the story of the heritage of the Hermitage Museum in Russia. It's this very famous museum. The Smithsonian today in Washington, D.C. has a better collection of Russian art than the Hermitage in Moscow because during World War II, when Stalin was trying to finance the war, he was selling off secretly Russian art. Do you know the story? Have you heard this? And Marjorie Meriwether Post, the Post serial heiress, whose home Mar-a-Lago Trump ends up purchasing, was the one who was buying everything from Stalin. Because one of her husbands, her third husband or second husband, was the ambassador to Moscow at the time. And so thanks to her, really her generosity, because she gave everything away to the Smithsonian, donated the entire collection to the Smithsonian. The Smithsonian has this incredible collection of art. But back to this beautiful home that she builds in Palm Beach after her death, trades hands. And anyway, ultimately, Donald Trump buys it and turns it into a country club. And there's a golf course there and such. And what do you think of when you think of Palm Beach? I think of rich liberals. That's what I think of. I think of a bunch of rich liberals, a lot of people from New York. And these people are untouchable, right? I mean, they have civil rights bona fides, right? Because that's the narrative. The Democratic Party, they care about minorities. And Republicans are just a bunch of bigoted, backwards, cowboy hat-wearing fools. Okay. And nothing is further from the truth. Because these people, all these rich libs that live down in Palm Beach, are all the biggest bunch of bigots there ever was. A lot of these clubs don't allow minorities. Well, they don't admit minorities. Oh, dirty secret. They don't like Jews. They don't allow Jews in their clubs. These clubs are very restricted. And Trump, and look this up, this was before he ran for president or anything. This is who Donald Trump is. Mar-a-Lago was the first unrestricted club. It was the first unrestricted private club in Palm Beach. And moreover, and if you want to poo-poo this whole LGBT for Trump movement, you got to understand, it was the first private club there that gave benefits, club reciprocity benefits, to domestic partnerships. Meaning that before there was an overturn of Prop 8 and before there was gay marriage, that Trump, okay, the bigot, the bigoted guy, the evil Republican hate monger, was giving club benefits to gay couples. Think about that. So when you're at the water cooler at the office, don't take it from people. Be armed with the facts. This is the narrative of Trump the bigot is going to fail spectacularly. And it, without a shadow of a doubt, is going to lead to a landslide victory in November. So I've got to talk about a few other speeches and some snippets from things that I learned and people that we ran into at the convention. So stay tuned. Back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Attorney James Bergener. I get the best news and information for the week from Sam Nation every weekend on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Well, imagine this. Look, we all spend time in traffic. We do. It's a fact of life. We're Southern Californians, and, you know, sometimes it takes a day and a half to travel 3 miles, especially if you live in L.A. But so being in cars, fact of life, and the fact of life is that sooner or later, something may happen. You might get hit. Somebody might crash into you. And they, you know, and they probably have insurance, you know, but and that's a good thing. You know, we're trained. Hey, well, you've got insurance. You know, everything's going to be okay. It's not necessarily true. Insurance, just because you have it, doesn't mean it's going to pay you what it promises. Even if you have your own insurance, believe it or not, they may not pay you what they promise you. You know, you buy the coverage and you have those policy limits and they say, well, it will cover you up to $100,000. You'll have to fight for it. And they, that insurance company, is motivated, believe you me, to keep as much of that money in their coffers and not give any of it to you. So here's what we need to do. It's simple. You get into a car accident, you have an injury, you have dog bite, whatever it is. It doesn't matter if you call attorney James Bergner. He's the guy to call. His friends call him Sweet James. And when you get to know him, you will too. James Bergner is a guy, he's a lawyer that understands, he understands what needs to be done on a case, and he puts his heart into getting it done. He'll take your case, he'll fight for you all the way and get you what's fair. If you have any kind of injury, anything, don't call the insurance company, don't talk to them, just pick up the phone and call 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. 2021, or visit sweetjames.com. All right, so talking about the Republican National Convention. So we were there for five days, and intense experience all the way around. A lot of walking, one thing I've got to tell you, and again, I mentioned it yesterday. I'm going to say it again today because it's important. The convention was a total letdown, for the media. The media came there, and the frenetic energy, I can't even describe to you what it's like on Media Row. You've got these little cubicles set up, and all the networks are there, and there's wires and computers and headsets and microphones and television cameras. The CNN booth is they're broadcasting just two stalls away from us. I mean, it's crazy, and they're all there. Believe you me, they're all there because of Trump, but they're all there expecting massive news to happen. they're expecting that there's going to be some kind of delegate brouhaha, that there's going to be an uprising by all the Cruz delegates. And that fizzled. That fizzled so quickly. I mean, it was just gone like that. And then they expected protesters. Now, the only problem with that is that organizers in Cleveland expected protesters too. And so the enormous police presence there, I can't be overstated. There were even highway patrol officers there from California. That's how far, I mean, it's not just Cleveland and the Secret Service. There are state troopers from Georgia, from Pennsylvania, from California, from all over. And they're all there making sure that order is maintained. And so what you have is, you know, when you have such an incredible show of force, it sends a message to the protesters that don't even bother. And so the protests were a complete flop. We try to get out there and see anything. You'd see on the news, oh, there's protesters. And then I'd walk out with producer Robbie and leave the protective bubble and step into these designated areas where the protesters were allowed. And there was nothing. I mean, it was nothing. It was pathetic. A few bullhorns and some crappy signs. And now most of these people are just promoting their own, you know, their own websites. You know, they're putting up signs that are, you know, they're really provocative. And then, but really they're just, they're self-promoting themselves. Look at me. And there was no meaningful organized protest. And I bring all this up just to explain to you that now you've got all these media people who have spent millions of dollars to get themselves out there, who are on scene, who have their producers and their assistants and their fancy people, and what? They got nothing to report. So you think you gotta, that's why they spent 3 days talking about Melania Trump and the 2.5 words that she lifted from Michelle Obama. Not even her, her speechwriter, some person deep inside the bowels of the organization. Yeah, I mean, well, of course, the absurdity is that Obama does the same thing all the time. Of course. And then did you hear about one of the Trump kids? Yeah, one of the Trump kids gives a speech, and they said, well, it sure sounds like this professor over here, you know, he's this Politico guy, looks like there was more plagiarism. And the Politico guy comes out and says, well, you know, yeah, it does sound like me, because I'm the one who wrote it. And like that news story fizzled. They were looking for anything they could. The media was out causing trouble. You know they're desperate. When the only two major confrontations that occur are, well, they both involve Eric Jones, the goofball gadfly from InfoWars. Alex Jones, that's right. The InfoWars guy. Well, anyway, so he's out there and what does he do? He gets into a scuffle with protesters and gets shoved and kicked. He did it really just to get attention. And then he gets into a fist fight / spitting match with those young Turk lib reporters that were in the middle of doing their podcast. Happened two doors down from our booth. Craziness. I mean, these reporters were so desperate to have a story and something to talk about that they were trying to pick fights themselves. And so that takes me then to Trump's speech, which, of course, is the last speech of the entire convention, happened late Thursday night. And so what have you heard about it? Well, I'll tell you, there's some great, you know, if you were to just listen to the drive-by media, you'd realize, you would think that this was the most awful speech ever in the history of all time. Because, what does CBS say about it? You know, I saw it, CBS called it vengeful. That Trump had a loud voice and that it was vengeful. Charlie Rose, he huffed and puffed about how it had little appeal to the better angels. Chuck Todd, the ridiculous clown on MSNBC, I thought it was an extraordinarily dark speech. And then, well, this is a Nicole Wallace. Who is she? She's the gal from W's White House. Yeah, she's an old Bush hack and Republican apologist who they drag out to, you know, validate their opinions about the conservative movement. We are now represented as a party by a man who believes in protectionism, isolationism, and nativism. And what's all this about? I thought Trump's speech was exceptional. And the thing about it is, it was exceptional because it laid down exactly the culture of what people are really upset about when it comes to Obama. And the left wants to frame this whole thing. Oh, you don't look at the past. Look at the future. Don't be stuck in the past. Focus. Use lofty words. Don't use dark, vengeful language. Don't use put downs. Why are they saying this? Because they don't want us talking about the last 8 years, because the last 8 years have been abysmal. They don't want us talking about it. They want us to lay out our policy agenda for the future. which everyone knows. You know, this is the crazy thing. Trump's speech, low on policy, not enough policy. Big on vitriol, short on detail. But Trump's speech captured the political culture that we are in today. The political culture of disgust with Obama's policies, disgust with our economy, disappointment in our economy. A conservative movement that is over gay marriage as an issue. We're a big tent Republican Party, bigger than it has ever been. A culture that embraces America first, not as some, you know, Nazi catechism, fascist call for protectionism, but rather that our tax dollars should go to taking care of us first and our needs first and our focus on our country first. An immigration policy that sees our culture as something that is under attack. Our way of life is something under attack. People are with Trump on this, by and large. And the Democrats have completely missed the boat. They're trying to write off his speech as being dark and vitriolic, when really, it captures the culture exactly of what's going on. So when we come back, last segment on our travails and all the crazy stuff that happened at the convention. I've got a few more good stories for you. Stay tuned. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James. I listen to Sam Nation.
All right. Okay, so everybody was so worried about us going out to the convention for the safety issue. And really, the truth be told, the worst part about the whole thing was whoever set up our hotel situation needs to be hung. The way it works during these conventions is all the hotels get pre-sold, pre-booked by different factions and different groups. And Sam Nation drew the shortest straw. In fact, I don't think it was even a straw. It was probably a bedbug. Because we ended up at the Days Inn over in Middleburg Heights, Ohio, which is another word for the ghetto. This hotel, all right, we're going to have to put this up. We're going to have to tweet this out or something. I held back on this for a while, but I kid you not, I had blood splatter on the wall in my hotel room. I sent it to my law enforcement friends. And I said, tell me what this is. And they're like, yeah, Sam, that's blood splatter. Also, my door to my room, it had signs of forced entry. The jamb on the door was completely splintered, and you could see that they buttoned it up with a lot of screws and hardware. But nothing about the floor was disgusting. There were stains. It smelled like precious bodily fluids all over the place. It was horrid. There was mold in the bathtub. It was absolutely the worst thing. And so my wife starts Googling, murder Days Inn, Ohio, Cleveland. And sure enough, there are a lot of results. So you feel free to have some fun with that. No, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. You have no options. By the time you get there, I mean, even months before the event, you have no options. And I had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to stay at the Marriott, but it was just for one room. And I wanted to stay with the whole crew. I'm not going to go off to the Marriott and leave everybody behind. We survived something. How does it Well, I mean, as a as an experience, as a bonding experience, how does it how does it measure up to Afghanistan? I mean, yeah, it was bad, right? I mean, back me up on this. It was bad, but it did have some humorous moments. People kept discovering nasty stuff in their room, and we were out there with John and Ken, and they had John Colbout found two socks peeking out from underneath his bed in his room when he checked in. They weren't his socks. And the whole time he had an internal debate. I don't know if he talked about it on his show, but he had an internal debate about whether or not to pull on the socks and remove them because he was worried they might be attached to a body. So he just kind of left them and called the front desk. No, it was stuff like that. It was horrid. Yeah. So what I did is I spent a night. I slept in my clothes. I just stripped away the bed cover, you know, that nasty, horrible, thin, quilty-looking thing that they never wash. I mean, they never wash it. I stripped it off and slept on top of the cover, sort of like mummy style, you know, just straight as a board. Woke up, felt horrible, took a moldy shower. And so the thing I did was I snuck out of the convention for a few hours and I went to Target and I bought myself a rug and two giant blankets, like those fleece blankets. I took the big one, the bigger one, and I covered the whole bed, even the pillows with it. And then the smaller one I slept under. I mean, I had to create my own environment because there's no way you would not walk in this hotel room barefoot. So, yeah, so I devised a little system. I take my shoes off and go on my little carpeted area that was my own rug. And then I'd walk on that barefoot and then get into bed, which was, I set it all up. It wasn't going to save my life, but, you know. Well, and the second most dangerous thing, let me point this out. I was with Sweet James. He came out for the day, supported us being there. And we went. You guys want to know where Sweet James eats? The most dangerous part of my whole stay, maybe even more dangerous than the Days Inn. I ate at Chipotle. Yeah, no, I did. We got some one of those bowls. You know, I got some chicken. So I made sure to drink enough to kill a horse that night, because no way in heck was I taking a risk on that. Well, I'm not. You know that the California delegation all got crippled by the norovirus. They were staying, and you can't make this stuff up. They were staying at an African-themed water park, which I'm not exactly sure, you know, if it was sub-Saharan, what theme it was following. But yeah, they were staying in an African-themed water park, and sure enough, half of them came down with what can be, in fact, a deadly stomach bug. So it knocked a few of them out. Yeah, no, the show went on. The California delegation was solidly pro-Trump. You know, Trump steamrolled the state. So he had sizable numbers there. And we got to meet up with the gal who spoke for the delegation, a black lady, really full of energy, full of life. She's a Pasadena resident. And she's got some great sons. You probably saw on TV her son standing behind her. And they were great guys, right, Robbie? I mean, they were great guys. We had a chance to talk to them, I think Thursday, both Wednesday and Thursday. And both times that we saw them, just a great family, great guys, really positive, really upbeat. True conservatives, you know. But anyway, Trump's a bigot, right? So we don't want to deviate too far from that narrative. Right. So, it was quite an event. But I'll tell you another thing about the safety of it. So many police officers there. And never have I seen so many happy police, because they knew that they were in friendly territory. when they saw your badge, or even if they just saw, you know, saw me in a suit, immediately recognized I'm with the convention. I'm one of the good guys. No, it's true. All the police there couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been nicer. And the fact of the matter is they're, and we talked to a few of them, and they're dreading next week. I mean, they're dreading this week that's coming up here with the DNC, because they know. Well, they know. Look, how many cop haters are going to be speaking? How many Black Lives Matters wingnuts are going to be speaking during the Democratic convention? And so this is what, you know, this is the kind of the last bit. I want to give you my opinion. File this away for next week. I'm going to give you my prognosis on the Democratic National Committee convention this week. It is going to be a disaster, okay? And I'm not just talking in the substance of it. I predict that organizationally, it's going to be a lot less smooth than the Republican event. And the nuts and bolts of everything worked really well. So, for example, Media Row. I mean, before we even got there, everything was set up perfectly. Everything worked. The internet was on. The air conditioning blew cold. They converted a parking garage. You know, the Media Row, when you look at that fancy CNN suite, you know something interesting? It's inside a converted parking garage for Quicken Arena. And what they did was they built drywall inside of the arena, put in windows, put in air conditioning, put in carpet. I mean, they converted it to interior space. It was amazing. And I'm already hearing from people that have gone out there. I'm already hearing rumblings of things not being set up right, of equipment that hasn't gotten in. Man, we're already hearing it. So I predict that by the time next Saturday 3 p.m. rolls around, we're going to hear a lot more of this, and it's going to be part of the narrative. And even if it isn't, we'll wait and see. But I have people on the ground who are going to give me the straight scoop. So I'll bring that to you next week. You can watch it. You can watch it. It's just going to be tired demagoguery. It's going to be horrible, whiny. It's going to be all about victimhood. We're going to learn all about victims and how about we should feel about victims. And even if they don't focus on Trump, and of course they will, what do they have? What do the Democrats have that is compelling? Because right now, if they're talking policy, they've already lost. I mean, that's the crucial thing, because politics is downstream of culture. And like I explained earlier in the program, Republicans have captured the cultural zeitgeist right now of America. They've done it for the first time in my adult life. Certainly, the Republicans are on it. And the message is not dark and vitriolic, as CNN would have you believe the Trump speech was. Instead, it accurately lays out all of the frustrations that the American public have with the direction of this country. And so in the last seconds remaining of the program, I'm going to tell you what statistic you need to pay attention to determine whether or not Trump is going to win. And it has to do with the percentage of Americans who are unhappy with the direction that the country is going. Last count, 70%. Yeah. Suck on that, Hillary. All right, we'll back Saturday, next Saturday, 3 p.m. Visit samnation.com for Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that jazz. Get the podcast if you've missed any portion of the show. We had a great show this weekend. It was fun. I love you. I'm so happy to be here. See you next week. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC.